Losing your job after years of dedicated service is traumatic. Make sure that you receive the proper notice and financial compensation.
People who come into your office will routinely burst into tears after being let go from a job that they've had for a number of years that they feel as committed to sometimes as they feel to their own family. And then when that gets taken away, inevitably there's a sense of loss. And as their counsel and giving them advice, you have to be compassionate. And it's not hard to feel their pain.
If you've been let go, contact employment lawyer Craig Lewis at employmentlawyermississauga.com.
All right, we are back. You know, I decided not too long ago that I'm just going to not fill the show with as many guests so we can just enjoy conversations, maybe go a little longer.
Cool.
But I still went over time today.
Still.
Feel bad for Les. He's been waiting for us. Les Ferguson Jr., he's the author of Still Wrestling, Faith Renewed Through Brokenness. He's on our show a few years ago, I think. And I don't even remember. Les, do you remember how we first connected? Did you reach out? I don't remember how we connected, Les. Do you?
Somebody, if I remember correctly, one of your listeners found my blog and shared it with you.
Right. Oh, man, now we got another guy with a southern accent. We had Charlie Daniels on earlier. Now we got Les Ferguson and...
You sound like Forrest Gump now.
Now I sound like Forrest Gump. I don't know how I did that, but anyway. Les, what part of the world are you from? That's probably different than where you're at. Are you from where you're at, or are you at where you're from? What?
Pretty much. I grew up from sixth grade on in Mississippi. My dad was originally from Mississippi. So after I got out of the Navy, I moved back to Mississippi, and I've been here ever since.
Well, your story was one that I just had to have on because, I started doing this thing called a journey segment. We labeled it that a few years ago, and it's a bit of a schmaltzy term these days. But really, the point behind it is it's, hope in the midst of mess. Because growing up in the evangelical church scene, the only people they ever had up on the platform to share their story were people that struggled with stuff, then they found Jesus, and now everything was peachy. And here you are, preacher. And, you're being a preacher, you're supposed to be maybe, I don't think this is theologically accurate at all, but some people think that your life is supposed to be better because you're serving God, you're on the front lines and all that stuff. But man, the stuff that happened to you and your family, I still can't get over it, man. And I don't think getting over it is the term we want to throw on you, Les, but you're living a new normal. Is that fair to say?
Sure. We learned that phrase in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina down on the Gulf Coast, and it's come back full circle if we learn it all over again.
I don't want to belabor the point too much, but it is obviously the big part of the story is the hell that you went through and abuse and murder and son and wife and the whole thing. So let's just get right to some of the points, and then I just want to turn it towards the light a little bit, even though I like wallowing in the darkness, as in Enneagram 4. How did you find out that your son was being abused by the guy you invited to live in your home? How did you initially find out?
Well, his behavior got really crazy. We knew something was wrong. He would leave his room on his hands and knees, pushing stacks of game CDs and movie DVDs to the bathroom. And if we'd catch him in time, we'd get him back to his room.
You're talking about your son?
Yes, my son. He would take those things to the bathroom and put them all in the sink and turn the water on because they were dirty. And it never made any sense until finally one day he voiced to his mother that he was being messed with, as he called it. And that's when it all began to make sense, and we began to see what was going on, and it just went down from there.
And tell us, all the words thrown around these days, should you use this word, should you not use this word? I mean, the word handicap, your son is handicapped. Your son was born with what?
He was just a couple of weeks shy of his first birthday when they diagnosed him with cerebral palsy. Over the years, they flirted with another disease called leukodystrophy, That's the same disease. I believe it was Jim Kelly, Buffalo quarterback, lost his son to.
Right.
And back and forth they went between cerebral palsy and leukodystrophy.
So did you confront the man once you found out, once you discovered that something was going on? Did you get up in his grill about what he was doing to your son?
No, I did not. I wanted to, but when we first got the words, first started figuring out that it was real, since he was a member of the church where I preached, I called the chief of police, who was a fairly new friend. But I called him and gave him a hypothetical situation, and he listened for about 2 minutes and said, "This is not a hypothetical. You stay right there. I'm sending one of my sex crimes investigators to your church building right now." And about 20 minutes later, the story was told to the police, and they got involved, and they would not allow me to have any contact with the man.
Well, that might have been a good thing. Otherwise, you'd be behind bars. Or if it was me, you know,
sure.
I think you know, guys, we talk like this, but who knows in the right, you know, given the right set of circumstances, what we do. But was there any question in believing your son because your son had cerebral palsy, because your son was handicapped? Is there any sort of, well, we're not too sure if we can believe his story because he's handicapped? You know, that just sounds so awful to say, but did you have to go through any of that?
Oh, sure. We had people that never really believed it. We had to go through a special forensic interview that the police brought people in to talk with him to try to figure it out, because Cole could communicate, but he couldn't communicate like you and I. And he was hard to understand, and it was difficult to ask questions and to get him to respond. So there was a lot of doubt and questioning. As a father, I have to tell you that I doubted for a while. It wasn't that I thought he was not telling the truth. It was the fact that I just couldn't believe something like that. How does that happen? I'm just going to do stuff like that. So it wasn't that I really doubted him. I just couldn't comprehend. And if I'm truthful with myself, I still can't comprehend how somebody can do those sorts of things.
Sure. Sure. Man. All right. So, I mean, so many questions. But, I mean, you got to take this hyper leap and move forward into the story. And he goes off to prison, but he's released on bail. I mean, how long did he actually spend behind bars? He was just arrested and released on bail, so it was like 24 hours a day. Like, how long was he locked up for, actually?
I don't even think it was a full 24 hours before he bonded out.
So he's released on bail, and then does he come to your house immediately, or what's the timeline?
Oh, no. He had a restraining order. He was not allowed to come anywhere near us. He wasn't even allowed to come to church anymore. So we never saw him again. The night before all this bad happened, my deceased wife thought that he was parked down the street watching the house. And I actually called that next morning the officer in charge of the investigation to see if I could get his tag number so we could find out if this is who was following her and or parking down the house the day before. And they wouldn't give it to me. They weren't allowed to give me the tag number.
Hmm.
And we got off the phone. I went about my meeting that day, and little did I know that he was back at the house. He actually came to the house to do his deed.
So he waited for you to leave, do you think?
He waited for me to leave. He waited for my middle son, who had spent the night away from home with kids from church, another family, and they had come by the house to get money for him to go play putt-putt golf with the youth group. He waited for him to leave. He waited for the next door neighbor to go inside. He was outside cutting his grass. Waited until everybody was gone.
And what were I don't even know how to ask this question. I mean, how do you know what his next steps were? Because the witnesses that would have been able to testify to all this are obviously gone. And And can I just stop? I just feel really awkward right now. I know it's been a little while, you know, but not enough time has passed ever, will ever pass, for us hearing your story to not be gutted on your behalf and just feel just horrible for you, man. And so, Les, obviously, we just got to stop. We got to stop and say, I am so sorry that you are even having to tell this story. I'm so sorry this has happened to you. And
well, it is what happened, and the only thing I can do moving forward is try to take the horror of it all and use it to help other people. So I have to tell the story. I had to tell it in the book. I have to tell it when I get asked to speak and talk about it. I don't refer to it as much as I used to because it's not. We've had to work really hard to not let that tragedy be our definition.
Yeah.
But there were witnesses that day. My youngest son was 5 at the time. He was there. We don't really know everything he witnessed. We do know that his mother fought to get him out of the house. We do know that he ran to a neighbor, and two neighbors came with him into the garage and tried to come in the door to the kitchen, and they saw the man doing his stuff, and he pointed a gun at them, and they ran back out of the garage and got down the driveway and heard the final gunshots. So there were witnesses of sorts.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just wondering about that transaction of, like, did he sneak into the house? Did he break into the house? Did he ring the doorbell and all of a sudden the doors opened up and your wife's heart would have just been racing? I mean, my goodness, right?
Yeah, he came through the garage. The garage door was open. He just came through the garage and busted in.
He just busted in through the garage. Okay, man. Oh, I can't. I actually have to stop thinking about it right now because I have just turned into some kind of uber sensitive. I'm still a jerk, but I'm a sensitive jerk now. Unless this story. Oh my goodness. Okay, so what's going on with this fella now?
He committed suicide that day.
That actual day. Can I apologize? I actually just remembered that, and I just feel bad I asked you that question, but I do remember that. He did kill himself that day. That's right, yeah.
He did. No problem. You not expected to remember everything you ever hear.
No, but that's that's a kind of a big detail. I should have remembered that from the last time we chatted. Do you wish that he had not killed himself?
There was a time when I really strongly wished that I could have had some time with him.
Yep.
In the aftermath of it all, it's really a blessing that he did. We were saved the drama and the agony of the trial and sentencing and all that. We didn't have to deal with any of that.
Has anyone ever said to you, I just had someone on recently, and it was a woman who, this young, really good kid, tried acid, went off his face, cops were chasing him, broke into this lady's house and started beating her, ferociously beating her. He didn't kill her, but he beat her bad. And now they're like pals, and there's like this story of forgiveness, and they speak together and blah, blah, blah. You know, imagine that scenario. This isn't even a fair question or a fair line of thought, I don't think. But, man, imagine. Can you imagine? Because the reason I'm asking this, Les, is because you're a preacher. And you've gotten back into ministry, and you're a spiritual leader. And Jesus is all about love and forgiveness. And imagine you and the guy who killed your son and wife doing the speaking circuit together. And you've forgiven him. And, oh, my goodness. Right? Can you even imagine that?
No, not at all. I've had to learn that forgiveness does not mean acceptance all the time. You don't have to bring somebody back into your life because you have forgiven them. You know, it's kind of like you have somebody that embezzles money from your business. Well, you can forgive them, but that doesn't mean you're going to let them be your treasurer again.
Yeah. What did you... How dark did it get for you, Les?
You know, I talk about it in my book about how I never abused drugs or alcohol or any of those things, but I wanted to really, really badly. I wanted to check out really, really badly. There were days that I never have understood anybody that would commit suicide. I never understood that for years and years. I just didn't get it. But I do get a pain so great that all you can think of is making it stop. Mm-hmm. I have much more sympathy and compassion for people whose family members have gone through that, for people who are depressed enough that they consider that, because there's a pain that's so great that you see no way out of. So I had some pretty dark days. I didn't get to that point. And I think the reason that I didn't was because I still had children at home. I still had people that depended on me, and I couldn't let my kids lose both parents. I had a scooter. Somebody gave me a scooter. It's great. It top speed about 65 miles an hour. And I loved that little scooter. I would use it on little short jaunts, and it's 5, 6, 7, 8 miles around town. I'd save gas. But one of the first things I did in the aftermath was I sold it, because I was afraid of having an accident and getting killed and leaving my kids without any parent at all. So I think that's really the reason why it didn't get to that point with me, but it was close.
Boy, can I relate to that, man. I mean, well, I think a lot of people who have dealt with the darkness, who have had to live in darkness for a chunk of time, when push comes to shove, the reason they don't kill themselves is because somebody is depending on them. Somebody else, right. if they kill themselves, you know, their kids or even their pet, somebody's going to need. Anyway, man. Okay, so Les, what are you still wrestling with?
Life, God, myself, family. And one of the things I've learned as a result of all this is that we're all broken. Even before my tragedy, I was broken. I just wasn't smart enough to figure it out. And so I'm going to continue to wrestle with who I am, who God is, and what he wants from me, and how I'm supposed to live, and what I'm supposed to do. So, yeah, I'm still wrestling.
What is different about your theology? Because I remember, this is a horrible example, but I remember asking Tim LaHaye, who wrote the Left Behind books, I said, how do you feel that now that all these millions and millions of people believe that the only real end times information that's true is the stuff that you've written about in your book? I mean, there are many eschatological viewpoints or theologies out there. And I said, how do you feel that now everyone believes that yours is the only one? And he said, well, it is. And I've had people over the years say, I've asked them that question, how has your theology changed? Les, I don't know, man. I don't think you can tell me that after going through what you've gone through that your theology did not change. Or am I wrong?
No, it did change. You know, not in the basics that God is God, Jesus is Jesus, and the Holy Spirit is the Holy Spirit, and God, you know, wants us to you know, obey him and trust him. All that is still the same, but my whole approach toward God, first of all, that changed. I had a very bad theology about who God was. I think I had this unwritten contract for years. You know, I'll do your work. I'll be your preacher. I'll be your minister. I'll put my family into the life of the church, and we'll serve that way. And your job, God, is I'm going to do that. You'll protect us. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, kind of a quid pro quo thing. And in the aftermath, I realized that that's not how God works. There's no guarantees just because I'm going to do ministry that he's going to take care of my family and protect them and keep them from harm. So I had to have a fundamental shift in my thinking about about what God, who God was and what he wanted from me and how he wanted me to live. And then my theology and approach to Scripture changed a good bit. I began to read the Bible through a whole new set of glasses. Hmm. You know, Hebrews chapter 11, and we read this great chapter about all these people who have faith. And I think we miss so much of the story. We have a flat, two-dimensional view of what's taking place, and we never stop and see these people as real people. You know, it's like God says to Abraham, go to a far country, and in our mind, Abraham's jumping up and down saying, go, God, go. That's, you know, this is great, fantastic. I'm glad we're doing it. And we never stop to even think for a minute that he might have struggled with that decision. And so my approach in the book, and even as I look at Scripture, is to try to look at the characters that I find there in a little different way, to try to see them, to see who they are and what they were like and how they're like us.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's making any sense.
Yeah. Well, Les, let me just bring this up as a final point here. I had Stephen Curtis Chapman and his wife on not too long ago, and of course, I don't know if you know anything about their story, but they're big, and some of our listeners don't even know who that is. They're big Christian singers, basically. Yeah. And one, they've adopted a bunch of kids. They got a bunch of kids. Anyway, one of their kids backed up the vehicle in their driveway and ran over one of their other kids and killed him.
Yes, I'm familiar with the story.
Okay, all right. And so I had a conversation with them about target theology. Now, help me track with this. There are people that would say, well, you know, if you're going to be a leader in ministry, then the enemy of God, Satan, you got a bigger target on your back, and that means that Satan's going to try to screw with you and mess you up and blah, 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 and target theology, right? You got a bigger target on the back if you're in spiritual leadership. And I don't know, man, I think that's garbage, and feel free to disagree with me, but I think it's garbage because basically, wait a second. So, God, I'm gonna totally sacrifice my entire life and be full time talking about you and ministry and leadership and all that kind of stuff, and as a result, my kid is gonna get run over because your enemy decided that was gonna happen. This is the kind of arrangement. This is the kind of theology that is going on. I don't buy that for a bit. You?
No, that's the same kind of thing where people would tell me in the aftermath, you know, this is God's plan. And I'm thinking, no, this is not God's plan. You know, God's plan wasn't to grow me as a preacher by making me see my wife and son get murdered.
Yeah.
You know, my son was raped repeatedly by this guy. You know, that's not a part of God's plan.
Yeah, that's what's we talked about it before. We had a lady who wrote a book. It was something called Everything Happens for a Reason. That sentence right there has come up more in my life over the last couple of years, and I've never wanted to vomit more regularly than when I hear that coming out of people's mouth. There's no question. If there is a God, I believe he is the supreme lemonade maker. I get that he takes lemons and makes lemon. I get that concept. But everything happens for a reason? What a dumb thing to say, especially as I'm walking through the line at your son and wife's funeral.
Yeah, I don't, that's not my theology either. I think things happen because it's a broken, evil, wicked world we live in. You know, airplanes don't fall out of the sky because God wanted somebody over in Alabama to learn a lesson.
Man, we got to hang out sometime. I like hanging out with people that agree with me. No, I'm just kidding. I don't. That was my old tribal thinking. I used to try to find people that believed the same as me, and now I try to find people that ask the same questions as me, and I think that's why it'd be good to hang out with you. Les Ferguson Jr., he's the author of Still Wrestling, Faith Renewed Through Brokenness. The website is lesfergusonjr.com. What a great... I'm so tired. I'm at the end of the show, and I didn't have any sleep last night. What I'm trying to say is I rarely invite people back on the show, but Les, it was such a pleasure to have you back again. Thank you, sir.
thank you for having me. Let's do it a third time.
Okay, easy now. Easy. Thanks, Les. Have a good weekend, sir.
You too.
There you go. Les Ferguson Jr.